Welcome to the Jerusalem Post podcast. I'm Yaakov Katz, and joined as always by Lahav Harkov. And this week, Lahav is our post-election episode, and we're joined by Herb Kanin, our longtime analyst, and Eliav Breuer, our political correspondent, who for him, this was his first election that he was the lead reporter covering. So Eliav, congratulations. Fantastic job.
Thank you.
And I think that the country, to a large extent this morning, is woke up and people are split. There are those who are feeling a little depressed and upset about the outcome of these elections. And then there's a large portion, those from the right parties, the right-wing parties, the religious parties, who woke up this morning and they're excited. They're looking forward to the government that's going to be potentially established and formed by Benjamin Netanyahu, who's coming back. So I'm curious to get all of your kind of initial reactions. We are speaking Wednesday afternoon. About 90% of the votes have been counted. So these are not the final results, but they do seem to be quite clear of where things are headed. So Lahav, why don't we start with you? Where are you in all of this?
I'm not surprised that the right won. I am surprised by how big the right won. And I even wrote this analysis sort of pre-exit polls yesterday about how the right can't get its act together. And I still believe that because I still think that at this point there's no one on the moderate right to vote for. And a sizable chunk, I don't know, like a 10-seat chunk of the right stopped caring about what was long the signature issue of the right wing, which is Judea and Samaria and being against a two-state solution. Maybe they still care, but it's just so not important to them that they're not willing to unite with the rest of the right. They put other things first, like not liking Netanyahu for reasons of corruption, for reasons of his working with the Haredim, whatever they may be. But again, like, had I known the right was going to win this big, maybe that wouldn't have been the thing that I was going to think about, you know, as we were nearing the exit polls. I think we've had a lot of talk about Ben-Gvir, and I do think that it would be, you know, interesting for all of us to discuss kind of and what his rise means for Israel. But I started thinking, and maybe we'll do a pop quiz for our listeners. Who has had the following election campaigns? Number one, no loyalty, no citizenship. Number two, death penalty to terrorists. Open it to the crowd. I mean, those are Lieberman slogans, and those are the things that Ben-Gvir said in his victory speech. And Ben-Gvir has been saying them. Now, we could say that we know, because Ben-Gvir has been somewhat of a public figure for 30 years now almost, that he dislikes maybe all Arabs and not just the ones who are quote-unquote disloyal. But it got me thinking that maybe you can have people who say all of these things, but because of our coalition system, the end result is not as bad as people have been making it out to be in recent months. So that's my like slight silver lining optimistic take.
Okay. Herb, what Lahav just said ties into something that you and I actually spoke about earlier today, which is that being in government does have a tendency of moderating someone.
Right. I think it's clear if you look back historically in 77 when Begin came to power, the front page of Time magazine was trouble in the promised land. When Sharon came to power, people were going crazy. What's he going to do? A bulldozer, going to send the whole region into war. When Lieberman became foreign minister, right? I remember I was covering the foreign minister at that time. You know, it's going to ruin relations with the world. Then he became defense minister. And, you know, here's a guy who talked about bombing the Aswan Dam at one point in time. So I think, you know, once you get into power, you kind of see things a bit differently, and it has a tendency to moderate your positions. Yaakov, to go into what you said in the beginning about, you know, the country woke up this morning and split. I agree with you. It is split. You've got a lot of people who are celebrating, a lot of other people feeling that the country is slipping through their fingers. But I think there's also a unique feeling that both sides feel right now, and that's kind of a certain sense of relief in that, well, finally, we've made a decision, right? I mean, this is, you know, for the first time since 2019, The country unequivocally spoke last night. You know, it said what it wants. It wants Bibi back, and it wants him back as the head of a religious right-wing government. That's what they want. There's no, you know, there's no waffling here. There's no ties. There's no, you know, creative, we got to do this or that. There was a clear decision. And I think to a certain extent, that gives you a sense of relief that this whole marshbear, this whole crisis, this governing crisis that we've gone through is now finally coming to an end. Now, to those on the left, it's not coming to an end in the way they would like it, but it is coming to an end.
Eliav, I want to ask you on that question, because it was interesting. This morning, I got a phone call from a friend who is involved in politics, but on, let's say, the more left-leaning side of the camp, and said to me, Yaakov, you guys should really push in the editorial, and the editorial line of the Jerusalem Post should be for national unity government. And a part of me, you know, makes sense, right? You always want to have as broad a spectrum as possible. But on the other hand, like Herb said, there's value that, you know, the country spoke, and the country wants this government. They want Bibi. They want Ben-Gvir. They want Smotrich. They want Shas. They want United Torah Judaism. They want a right-wing religious government. Is there a chance, Eliav, that we will see a different government come? Is there a chance that somebody else will join?
First of all, I just want to note something. When you go into the numbers a little bit, the actual difference between the amount of people who voted for the Bibi bloc this time, those four parties that are going to make up the Bibi bloc, and last time, is only a difference of 0.3%, which is very, very small. But the in mandates, it's a leap from 52 seats to 65 seats, 62 or 65 seats, which is huge. So I think that, yes, there was a clear decision, but the decision was more than anything else that had to do with the splitting on the left, rather than people actually changing their views to a large extent.
Splitting on the left, you're referring specifically to the Arab bloc, which broke up into three parties this time. Right.
Exactly. The Arab bloc and also.
But also Labor and Meretz.
Labor and Meretz. Exactly. And Labor and Meretz, Labor especially, just refused to merge. And now it looks like Meretz is gonna go under the threshold. And that's 150,000 wasted votes. So those are two big, almost tactical mistakes. And I know we like to look at the big picture and, you know, the strategic shift, but I think there's a lot of smaller things that just made a big difference here. Having said that, though, I think that the chance of there being a unity government is very small, for the simple reason that realistically, the only one who would have maybe considered going with Bibi would have been Gantz. And Gantz just said moments ago that he was going to go to the opposition. That doesn't mean that he will. In the previous, or we all remember two elections ago when he ended up, you know, saying it was an emergency and joining the Bibi government. He could say the same this time, and there will be public pressure, I think, to try to bring that together. But I think that it's not realistic for Bibi and Lapid to sit together. I don't think Lapid's gonna even give that a chance. And Gantz would be a much more realistic option. But it looks like, from what things stand now, it looks like we're going to a right wing government.
Lahav, you know, you've covered a lot of these elections over the years, and especially over the last five, and you're doing it now from the perspective of kind of looking at the prime minister's office and focus very much on the diplomatic take of Israel. But how is the world, I'm curious, looking at the outcome of this election?
Right now they're looking at it quietly because they've all been burned, like many of us, by jumping the gun on Israel. There's no congratulations. There's nobody's like calling Netanyahu just yet. I think that'll come once a government is formed. Maybe will come once the president assigns Netanyahu to form a government. But I think it'll be a while. That being said, ahead of the election, we heard some things coming from Washington, sort of people talking to Netanyahu and saying that it would be disastrous if he brought Ben-Gvir and his folks into the government, and if he made Ben-Gvir a minister, and Netanyahu sort of brushed them off. I will say that as far as I can tell, the reports that was a topic of conversation when President Herzog was in Washington are false. That wasn't something that Secretary of State Blinken or President Biden brought up. But there's definitely concern, which again brings me back to Lieberman. I mean, Herb Herb was reporting on these topics at the time, so maybe he has what to say. But like, there were a lot of people who, when Lieberman became foreign minister, they were like, oh, Israel has a fascist foreign minister. We don't want to talk to this person. Lieberman's tenure was not without its controversies, for sure, but it wasn't like devastating for the state. And I think if the most likely scenario, I think, and again, we could discuss different scenarios, is that Netanyahu will bring the religious Zionists into his government, I think, and then Ben-Gvir will be a minister. But the chance of him being a minister where he actually has to really deal with the world a lot is pretty slim. I mean, he wants to be public security, which makes him in charge of police. And that is a position that, you know, is in contact with foreign public security ministers or foreign heads of police and things like that. But it's not, it's definitely not a core part of the job. So, we're going to get bad media coverage. People who work in the Hasbara industry, the Hasbara complex, are going to have a harder time than they did before. And Netanyahu will have to navigate this. It'll be murky waters, but I think it's not going to be, it'll be like a wave of condemnations and things like that. And then people will sort of forget about it until he does things like specific things that drive people crazy again and again. And we've had that in the past.
Yaakov, if I can just add to that one thought. And that's, I think that Israel is going to be helped here by the fact that it will be kind of framed abroad as part of this larger movement of far right wing parties throughout the world, right? I don't think that people, when they talk about Ben-Gvir, they're going to put him in the basket with what happened in Sweden, where a far right wing party is the second largest party in parliament. What happened in Italy, where the far right wing party is now the prime minister. What happened in France during the last election. So I think we're going to be helped to a certain degree by it being framed within this whole concept. Well, this is something that's happening throughout the world. It's happening in America to a certain degree, and it's also happening in Israel.
On the other hand, we are held to a higher standard often, right?
And right. No doubt about it. But it's, I think it's going to be easier a bit to explain it than if, you know, this was an anomaly in the world.
So I'll just say, personally speaking, doesn't help me so much. Lav and I have spoken about this before on the podcast, but the fact that the far right is on the rise in other countries in the world doesn't make me feel any better to watch that happen in the country that I live in. But I take your point, Herb, and I've always said, Herb, you are the man of context. So whenever we need context, we go to Herb Context Canaan. Eliav, with Gantz probably not joining, right? And Ben-Gvir and Smotrich coming into the government. There's an argument to be made potentially, right? That what Bibi wants to do is first he'll bring these in. He'll create this government that's the right-wing one, pass legislation that will help him maybe avoid his trial. And then once that's over, then he can reach out to other people and say, listen, there's no reason to reject me. Now you can come in. You think that's something that might happen?
I don't know. I think it's too far... It's too far down the road. I think that if that would happen, it would have to come on behalf of Ben-Gvir and Smotrich. Like, I don't think anyone will join them with Ben-Gvir and Smotrich still in the government. And since Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, you know, are at 14 seats, it's hard to imagine that Netanyahu will say, you know, fire all of the ministers from their party and bring on a new party. That would be very significant, but it's happened in the past. He's made changes. I'm sure can tell us the context better than what I remember, but I think it was in 2013 when he fired some party from his coalition and brought in another party, and that could happen, but it's hard to tell right now. Like, it's just too far ahead, and
right.
I think there's too many factors.
Lahav, you've followed Netanyahu for a long time, and Herb as well. So I'm curious from both of you, this is a big win for Netanyahu, right? And when people look back at the 2015 election, that was also very much viewed as like this turning point in Netanyahu's career. A lot of the criminal investigations that then opened up came after that period in time. And people saw, a lot of people have said that was like a change, because he kind of snatched victory out of the jaws of failure at the time. This is also a huge win for him. Is what type of Netanyahu is going to be coming back into the prime minister's office?
I think we have like Netanyahu Unchained, kind of, where he will have very little limitations on things that he wants to do. Because the other parties are basically going to be willing to go with what he wants to do. The only things that they won't agree to, or at least the Haredi parties won't agree to, are the kinds of economic reforms Netanyahu usually wants. But he's already given up on those things, the things that he did in the late 90s and in the early 2000s to free up the Israeli economic market, because he's realized that they're not vote getters, even though they were very successful in improving Israel's economy. So in a way, you know, that you'll see all these sort of Likud proposals that in the past couldn't go through because there was always some kind of more moderate coalition partner. Even in 2015, which was a fully right-wing government, you had Kahlon, who was right-wing, but like center-right, like to the left of Netanyahu. That Likud is the moderate party now, you know, on the spectrum. I guess you could say Shas is the moderate party, except for on religion and state. But yeah, we're going to have Netanyahu very emboldened, I think. When it comes to his trials, I think it's going to be very interesting because religious Zionism has proposed all these laws that would, in theory, you know, be his get out of jail free card. And when Netanyahu is asked about them, he always says he has nothing to do with it. He doesn't want it. He's not advocating for it. And not a lot of people believe that. But I think it will be hard for him to go all the way with those things out of a concern that it could backfire. I think he's smart enough to realize that, you know, the Supreme Court is still very powerful in this country, can overturn laws. At this point, I don't think that the Knesset, we'll have to see what the coalition is like, but the Supreme Court is still very powerful in this country, and he can't just go all in on his own sort of self-interest without there being checks and balances. And so I am not as panicked about that either, even though I do think they're definitely going to try if it's a fully right-wing coalition.
What do you think, Herb?
Look, first of all, I think for Netanyahu, this was a huge victory. And if you saw, for him, it was kind of, you know, vindication. If you saw the speech last night, I mean, he got emotional. And he's not a guy who shows his emotion often. I think for him, it's a huge victory. I also think when you look at Netanyahu, you got to keep a couple of things in mind. First of all, he's a man with a sense of his own legacy, right? And I think that is going to be forefront in his mind, how he's going to be remembered. He's not going to want to be remembered as the guy who's, you know, going down in history to have destroyed the democratic mores of the country. So I think, you know, all the fears that he's going to, you know, come in and just, you know, railroad everybody, be done with the judiciary, that's not Netanyahu. I think Netanyahu is much more moderate than the caricature of him. And I think we saw that last night as well. You know, he spoke briefly about not going off into adventures. I think, you know, he's going to have a tough challenge because he's going to have all these proposals coming from the right, coming from religious Zionists. But in the end, he's going to be the one calling the shots. Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, they don't have a lot of places they can go. I'm not sure I agree with Lahav that you're going to see Netanyahu unhinged, because I think I don't buy into this thing that he's not concerned about the well-being of the country. He does not want to destroy the state. That's not how he wants to go on down into history.
But he does want to find a way out of the trial, right?
Said, you can do that without destroying the state. I mean, even Aaron Barak, right? He said that, you know, he was a defender of the court. I'm not saying that he's going to end up being this huge defender of the court, but I don't think he's going to go, you know, unhinged against everything. I just said that's
the question of, again, who is the Netanyahu who's coming into office, right? And I think, like, you know, we don't necessarily know, but we know that it's a huge win for him. And it'll be interesting to see what he does with that. Eliav, someone we haven't really brought up in this conversation, but was an important player in the election, is the current prime minister, Yair Lapid. He had a big loss on Tuesday. What's his future? Where's he headed next? What can we expect to hear? And are people upset with him? Like, what are the rumblings you're hearing on the center left side of the map?
First of all, I just want to add to what Herb just said, and that I think that on top of Netanyahu maybe not going as far-fetched as we thought. There's also going to be an opposition. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Balfour protests resume. So I think Lapid's going to, I mean, he doesn't really have a choice other than to, you know, he's going to become the opposition head. He's going to put up, you know, as much of a fight as he can. There is mumbling and grumbling. I think there was before also. His conduct during the campaigns was unclear, I think, and the outcome shows that he wasn't able to hold his group together. So there's a lot of rumbling, but I'm not hearing anything about anyone from Lapid's own party wanting to replace him or anything like that. I think he's still the uncontested leader of his bloc. I am hearing a lot of talk about replacing Mihaeli. A lot of people are angry at her, but that's a lot smaller party, so less consequential.
Lahav, wrap us up. Give us hope for a good future.
First of all, if you want stability and if you want to feel like things don't change in this country, then the fact that the knives are out in the Labour Party, which is a tradition going back decades, you know, that ties us back to people like to the days of even Ben Gurion. So not surprising when Labour does badly in elections. Yeah, exactly. The leader is out, and they've had many, many, many leaders in recent decades. Look, I think we still have weeks to go until we know what kind of government we're going to have, but it does look like we will have some government stability. And I think that is a relief. I mean, I think that's what we need. So that's, you know, something to think about going forward, that some stability will be good, even if it's not, you know, you might favor this government, you might not, but that is helpful. Something we've needed after 3.5 years. And certainly for us reporters, we're sick of elections already. I mean, it's Eliav's first, but for the rest of us, it's our fifth in a very short time.
Okay. Lahav, Herb, Eliav, thank you so much for your insight. And again, I guess the silver lining is like all of you kind of said, is maybe we won't have elections for a couple of years, and that'll give us an opportunity to do something else for a bit and not just have to cover endless politics and mudslinging between Israeli politicians.
Yaakov, you had a different silver lining. Why don't you tell our listeners?
Oh, well, that was more in jest, Lahav. But I did. Mm-hmm. I did write on Twitter earlier today that finally the Wing of Zion, which is the airplane that was built to serve and to fly our heads of state, president, prime minister, at a cost of like 700 million shekel or 800 million shekel, a ton of money. And Lapid and Bennett have refused until now to fly on it, even though it's operational. It's been sitting on a tarmac and not doing anything. Now it'll finally be able to fly. So, you know, at least something good is coming of it, because that's been ridiculous that plane hasn't flown. So hopefully Netanyahu will take off soon and fly around the world in the Wing of Zion, and we'll have some stability in our government. But thank you all for joining this week's and listening to this week's Jerusalem Post podcast. You can find us always on Apple, Google Play, and anywhere podcasts can be found.